Welcome to another episode of This Catholic Life. Conversations about life's ups and downs, big and small, how we deal with every situation imaginable, whatever life throws at us, but still manage to be sensible, practical, and joyful. Today's show is Armchair Catholics, a conversation about podcasts, mass media, and things that can draw us closer to other Catholics in other countries, and hopefully closer to God. I'm your host, Peter Holmes, and today I'm joined by my co-host, Ryan Galliott, artist, resident geek, and co-host today.
Hello, thank you for having me back.
Always welcome, Rox. And you're one of the originals. We're not really having you back. So, also, we're welcoming today, from all the way across the ocean, Rich Budd, father, podcast host, and producer, and occasional worker in the Diocese of Lansing. Hello, Rich.
I think occasional, good morning, or it's good morning for you, it's good evening for me. But I think occasional is a bit generous there, Peter.
Occasional. Well, we need to define occasional, don't we? What do you do in the Archdiocese of Lansing?
Well, I think I should clarify. It's just a diocese. It's not an archdiocese. The residents of Detroit would be a little bit upset if they thought we were usurping their title. I am the director of marriage and family life ministry for the diocese. And when people ask me what I do, I say, well, what goes on in a family? Everything. Okay. Well, that's about everything.
Which means it's a complete mess and somehow it comes out the other end.
Absolutely.
Before we get started, we should remind the listeners that if you like the show, you can write us a review on iTunes. The more reviews we get, the easier it is for people to discover the podcast. You can contact us directly, by the way, on thiscatholiclife.com.au or on our website, which is www.thiscatholiclife.com.au. Please do keep those ideas coming. We've been really enjoying getting all the feedback, especially the ideas for new podcasts and topics. But let's dive right into today's topic, Armchair Catholics. We've called it that because Rich and two of his friends, are we calling them friends, Rich?
yeah, we'll call
we
them
We put
friends.
Them on the spot. Are actually hosts of...
I wasn't prepared for that question.
They're co-hosts of a podcast, which I've been a long-time listener of, called The Armchair Catholic. It is The Armchair Catholic, isn't it? Not plural.
The Armchair Catholic, single.
Which is on iTunes, Spotify, all the normal podcast apps. They've been going. I think you've been going over 2 years with the Armchair Catholic.
Yeah, it's unbelievable to think about that. We thought maybe we'd go for a month, get our moms to listen, and then that would be about it. But we've been gone for about 2 years.
Well, yeah, and you're over 100 episodes now, and that's that's quite an achievement in itself. And your listeners, I think you were bragging several episodes ago about the fact that you've covered most continents. I don't know if you'd had Antarctica yet.
Yeah, we've been on every continent.
Oh, wow.
But Antarctica is being, well, besides Antarctica. that one's being a little bit slow.
You
got to
work on your penguin appeal down there.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so the Armchair Catholic covers, it's a little different to This Catholic Life. It covers a wide range of topics. Basically, the reason it appealed to me, at least, is it's three guys shooting the breeze, as we say here. Do you have that expression? Mm-hmm. Where you're basically just shooting the breeze about life, the universe, and everything. So whatever's coming up, whatever's happened in that week, and you often talk about the topical issues of the day simply because that's what's on your mind, which I have to say is part of its appeal. We're going to talk more about what podcasts can be good for in a more of macro sense, in a wider sense. But before I get into the podcast itself, I wanted to ask a little bit, Rich, about the ministry programs in Lansing. You're not the only person on the podcast who works for the Archdiocese. I think Craig also works for the Archdiocese.
Mm-hmm. So Craig is our director of new evangelization. And our bishop has really made evangelization a key focus of his time in the diocese. And so in 2012, he wrote a pastoral letter on the new evangelization. And Craig really has been, since he's been in the diocese, it was his kind of job to implement the bishop's vision. One of the things that we did is we had three assemblies for the whole diocese. The first assembly was just for people working in ministry to kind of lay down a common vision. This is the direction we're going. We'll get everybody on board. 2 years after that, we had our second assembly, and that was for people that were in the, ministry, but also you're really on fire Catholics in the pews, volunteers, you know, the ones that are always showing up for everything. And that was focused on trying to win back Catholics that have strayed away from the practice of the faith. And then the third assembly we had last year, and that was open to any Catholic in the Diocese of Lansing. We had 14,000 people show up, and for us, that's a pretty good number. We had to rent out a basketball stadium for the event.
Now, I heard Craig say that this was roughly one in four active members of the diocese.
Yeah, it was a quarter of all of our Sunday Mass going Catholics.
That's
in the diocese.
Pretty impressive.
And so,
cool.
Yeah, it was preceded by a 4.5 mile long Eucharistic procession from the cathedral to the basketball stadium. And we shut down the streets of the capital city of our state, the capital of our state. And then, the day was some talks by, I don't know if you've heard if Father Mike Schmitz has gotten down to Australia. So he was there and some others. And then we had Mass. And it was just kind of a day for, kind of, again, the message of evangelization being proposed to every Sunday Mass-going Catholic in the diocese. So that's Craig's job. I probably gave him way more attention than he deserves. Sean is the third of us, and he is the he was the superintendent for the diocese.
Right. What does that mean, though? Like, it sounds like he wears a nice
superintendent
hat, sort of like it's a fire warden or something.
Yeah, that would actually no. Superintendent, he was just the he directed all of the Catholic schools.
Okay,
in the
so
diocese.
He's the head of Catholic schools. Yeah.
So each particular school has its own principal and staff, the principal has to answer to somebody,
right.
And so that was Sean. He's no longer in that
right.
role. He left that role and went just back to teaching high school.
Right.
Religion classes, and he was ordained a deacon, so he's now Deacon Sean.
Yes, yeah. It's interesting noticing the change in his tone on the podcast too from the time he got ordained. That's an interesting sort of listen.
Oh yeah,
he's
how so? I haven't noticed.
He's been much more careful about what he says, and is
Oh okay.
And he does tend to. It's interesting. He has a very much more a pastoral approach, and he's quite careful about how he's been taken. Which I think has been a really good thing.
Grace of the sacrament.
Indeed.
Yeah.
And I don't think he seems to be aware of it in that sense. So that's, I think, as you said, the sacramental influence. What I'm interested in is, just briefly before we go on, is that at least from looking at the stats, there seems to be quite a difference between the American culture, particularly in more, not rural, but regional American dioceses, and Australian practice, because our worship attendance here in Sydney in particular, is slightly higher than the rest of the country, I think, but it's still quite low overall. Mm-hmm. Like we would be, I think, lucky to get 14% of our Catholics into Mass, and that's like a once a month basis, basically.
Sure.
What would you say is your involvement, like census versus Mass going?
I would say we have about 25% of those that identify as Catholics that come to Mass. Mm-hmm. Again, I think the standard is at least once a month.
Okay.
And so about 25%.
Hmm.
And that is pretty close to the national average.
Right. Okay.
Now, obviously, in some places it's going to be less, some places it's going to be more. But Lansing pretty much tracks with the national average.
Right. Mm-hmm. Our national average is tracking to be within single figures, like in not long at all ahead of us. That's part of the culture of Australia. We've never really been a hyper-religious sort of base of a country, and sort of the official, as Craig very kindly pointed out when I did your podcast, that we're for a convict nation, and our overlords were in fact the Anglicans, and the Anglicans have suffered almost the worst of the decline in religious life, except perhaps the Uniting Church here in Australia. Perhaps we should move on to the podcast itself, speaking of service and how we have contact with various people. Let's start by asking, what prompted you guys to begin a podcast? I mean, it's not something you've done as an Archdiocesan initiative, is it?
No. In fact, we had the idea for the podcast, and we went to the diocese to ask them if they would support it, because all this equipment is a little bit pricey. the response that we got at the time, that particular leadership has shuffled since then. But the response that we got was podcast, like, what? What is this? No one's going to listen to this. Like, is it, do you listen on the radio? Like, so it was an issue of it's hard to make a case when the person you're trying to argue to doesn't even understand what you're trying to.
When they're still getting used to television, yeah.
Exactly. One story that I should say a little bit before I go into the rest of it is when we came up with the name, we were a little bit too hasty, and we registered for the domain. And then, you know, we were excited. Okay, now we have the domain name. Let's Google it.
And that's the wrong order of things.
Yeah, that's the wrong order of things. Up popped some, and it was right around the same time. It was like maybe a week earlier. Pope Francis had a homily in which he preached against armchair Catholics. And it was like, oh no.
Oh, I wonder if you got lots of hits from that. Like people going, who are these armchair Catholics?
They're trying to overthrow the papacy. thumbing their nose at the Pope. What he meant by it was he was preaching to bishops and cardinals and saying, don't just sit in your armchair and let the, you know, the church just kind of float by. So the story that we, how we kind of came together is, you know, Sean, Craig, and I were, we're all working for the diocese. And occasionally, you know, as you do when you're working with others, you stop at the coffee station, you go to somebody's office and you say, hey, did you hear the news about this? And then you end up talking for a little bit. And then as time went on, we mentioned the fact that we were grateful that we were in a situation in which we could have conversation about politics, sports, local weather phenomena, you know, whatever the case may be, within kind of a context of Catholic culture. Right. And then how many of our siblings and friends just didn't have that because they worked in a secular environment.
Yeah, because you kind of have to explain your entire context when you open those conversations.
Exactly. Right? There's no common ground. Well, there's little common ground. And so as we continue that conversation, the thought just, you know, came up, why not start a podcast? And you know, there was a lot of discussion about whether or not this, I mean, I think from the time that we had the idea until the time we actually started with our first episode, it was 9 or 10 months. And,
well, you and beat us on that particular record. So we took longer to get ourselves organized.
So really, the, you know, it's because you're trying to form your vision and what, you know, what's unique about you, and because you don't just want to keep repeating what's being done. And as we saw with other specifically Catholic podcasts, they're all trying to teach an element of the faith, or express a belief from a certain point of view. You know, you might have the mom podcast, or you might have the two young priests podcast or something like that. And instead of explicitly trying to teach, there is an element of that. We wanted to just have a conversation that you're invited into.
Right.
And so from the beginning, we set up social media accounts to try to get people to engage in the conversation about the topic. And so we wanted to provide the conversation. And that's really our kind of our most consistent feedback, is we feel like we're part of the conversation.
I have to say that's the experience I had and what I was looking for, frankly, in a podcast. Because when I went looking for podcasts before I thought about one myself, was that conversation. It was the conversation I used to have when I was back in seminary, when I had a bunch of mates. When I was in Melbourne, we used to meet every Friday night, have a port, and you know, just talk about life, the universe, and everything, and hold forth, and feel relaxed around friends where you knew you could say things and it wouldn't be taken, you know, it would be taken in the context it was meant. You could actually have a really robust discussion. And that's what I have to say, your podcast is one where I feel at home in, even though some of the times you talk about stuff and I go, what the heck are they talking about? And I just, yeah.
You mean like specifically American
yeah,
topics?
Well, there's just sort of attitudes. Like when you talk about eating things and you're describing and you're all sort of salivating over some particular feast and I'm thinking, that sounds revolting. Yeah, because we haven't actually experienced it ourselves, yeah, of course. Yeah. It's almost the true, by the way, of any dish. When you actually describe what you do to prepare a particular food dish, it almost always sounds bad unless you've experienced it, you know, you've tasted it and you go, yum. But if you, you know, if someone explains how you make sausages, for example, no, don't tell me.
or Vegemite.
Vegemite.
Yes. I've never actually had Vegemite, but I've heard a lot about
it. Let me talk you through it if you're going to, because most times Americans have a bad experience because they haven't got an Australian to advise them on how to eat it.
That's right.
They usually slap it on like jam or something. It's just a horrible thing. In terms of the actual podcast, I wanted to say you handle quite serious topics, but at the same time, some of your better episodes or some of the episodes in addition to those serious topics have been quite lighthearted topics, or perhaps ones that aren't quite as serious. So, for example, you've talked about quite serious issues in the American church as they arose, but you've also talked about things like the beer wars episode, where you actually just had an argument about what kind of beer is appropriate for a Catholic. Now, that's fantastic. And it's a discussion I was, you know, shouting at the podcast device, you know, going, no, you can't say, which is precisely what we're aiming for. Now, can you tell me which episode of yours has had the best response, do you think, and why you think that is?
That's difficult to say because we've had, but as you said, because we're not really tied into a certain genre or topic, we're free to discuss anything.
Yep.
And so,
so you don't fall in any niche what market found, or anything like that.
Yeah. What I have found is if we can have a conversation in which we're not just kind of like self, like patting each other on the back, like, oh yeah, we all agree on the same thing. Like if there's actual differences of opinion, those tend to be the best podcasts. Right. So Beer Wars is for sure. It's one of the ones that we always hear about. Right. That was great. And the great thing about that was we decided that we wanted to do a podcast on tattoos.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so the first half of that podcast is just about tattoos and like whether or not it's, a Catholic thing to be able to get a tattoo. And somebody just mentioned something about beer. And then it was off to the races. And so the last like half an hour of the show is all about beer.
Well, at the risk of hijacking this episode, I just want to outline that I think it was you, Rich, who were in favor of craft beers. And
absolutely.
Sean basically was in favor of any beer that was free.
Yellow water.
And he tried at one stage, I don't know if I heard this accurately, but he seemed to try at one stage to sort of sell it with as the virtue of poverty to actually be able to.
There were so many times in that episode that from my memory that he tried to like find the Vita Media. Like he tried to like, okay, we can both be right. And I just slapped him down. And I was like, no, that is not good.
Yeah.
So,
well, I'd love to do an episode with him on whiskies because he seems to be interested in them, but
I'm
not sure that he's got the high moral ground having argued for that low end beer. Sorry, you were saying.
But no, I mean, we had, this may be a more American topic. This past January, we had a lot of our political action was many of our states were trying to push through more and more radical abortion laws.
Right.
And the governor of the state of New York, Andrew Cuomo, signed into law an extremely radical abortion law, and really publicly celebrated over it. And he's a Catholic. And so a lot of people were calling for his bishop to excommunicate.
Right.
And so we had an episode with a canon lawyer who explained that this isn't really an excommunicatable offense. Mm. And the funny thing is I think when when people turned on that episode, they were expecting us to give an argument of why we should excommunicate Andrew Cuomo, and it ended up being the opposite.
Well, that's a good thing, because you've actually sat down and said, you know, the simplistic, the overly simplistic kind of knee-jerk reaction is not always the best one to go with. Mm-hmm. So, you've also had an opportunity to educate people on what the point of excommunication is and what when it's actually used. It's often Catholics look at the excommunication thing and they think this is the disapprove button, you know, the unlike button of the Catholic Church. I don't like anything. You're excommunicated. Yeah. That's not how it works.
Yeah. You've done something sinful, so you're excommunicated.
Well, we're all in trouble if that's the case.
Exactly. I would say some of our most popular episodes are with Father Joe Krupp. We call him the chaplain of our podcast, and he's very much kind of a common right. man, and but he's a holy priest, and he comes on and provides some good laughs.
Yep.
But
sorry, Ryan, you had a.
I was just saying that's the beauty of these podcasts is the concept of conversation and how it's something that's a lot more approachable for so many people, even at university, talking to a lot of. Non-Catholics or atheists, they're so much more willing to enter into the conversation than to be spoken at with, you know, dogma and this or that, you know.
Somebody at a corner swinging the Bible around.
That's right.
You know, screaming at people.
And just being able to...
I wonder how many converts...
Yeah, just connecting on that human basis of conversation, being able to understand each other's point of views and come across. And something as relatable as beer... or food,
yeah, exactly.
or even Father Joe Krupp. You mentioned Father Joe, and to be honest, it took me a little while to acclimatize to him because he came into the studio. Now, you guys just take the mickey out of each other, but he is like the top level taking the mick. He's just completely, like almost nothing that comes out of his mouth is it's complete waffle and made up stuff. And he's just he's saying, oh, I can't remember anything he said because he just, you know, he'll make up something and just say, oh, I'm totally this or that. And you guys are trying to keep up with him because he's just so hilarious. And you're sitting around trying not to be disrespectful to a priest, but he's completely taking you for a ride. It's hilarious because he's got such an amazing sense of humor and deadpan humor.
Before he was a priest, he was a comedian.
Oh, really?
And so, yeah. And so a lot of what he says and does is he's going for the
right,
laugh.
Yeah.
And so it's, yeah, sometimes we just sit back and just, let him go.
I was going to say, we probably should do an episode on how comedy, or laughter basically, is a part of ministry. It'd be a really intriguing conversation with
him.
Oh,
yeah, that is a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, coming back to that then, the question of whether the podcast is for faithful Catholics or a form of evangelization strikes me as being a little bit artificial a question. While we pitch it as a conversation that Catholics would have, clearly, it's the sort of conversation we want to invite people into. Even this podcast, while it is a part of the Archdiocese, and you know we're Catholics, we the conversation has mentioned and drawn in people who are not Catholics at all. In fact, not even Christians. A previous episode we had was on superheroes and how Catholic they might be. You know, and they're not necessarily made by Catholics. In fact, one of the points we made is that there's quite often a Jewish influence in some of those superheroes, but. The point is about engaging with culture, and that means inviting people into a genuine conversation. And one of the things that I've noticed about your podcast and about hopefully what we're trying to achieve here is that we're trying to demonstrate Catholics don't have two heads. We're not these weirdos who sit around being prudish and rigid about everything, you know.
Oh, that must be an Australian thing.
Oh, really?
Because Catholics in America do have two heads.
I see you're hiding your second head there on the... Well, I mean, what's intriguing is that I've had a lot of friends through other, like, you know, I play online games or I don't anymore, but I used to. And I, you know, been involved in sports clubs. And often someone will say, after knowing you for about 3 or 4 years, they'll say, you are not... the way I expected you to be when I heard you were Catholic.
Mm. For sure.
And I say, what do you mean? Do you mean I'm just a regular guy? And they go, no, you're not a regular guy. You're different, but you're not what I expected you to be. And which is an intriguing thing. That means they've got an idea, a stereotype, and that means someone's either given them a false idea or they've been successful in sending propaganda about Catholics, or they just don't know any Catholics or people who are talking to them. Now, surely, I mean, 1/4 of Australians, theoretically, on the census are Catholics. So you kind of have to have met some somewhere. You know, if you're wandering around Australia.
supposedly one out of every four people that you pass.
So something must be, you know, there must not be an identification there. But also, I mean, I don't tell everyone, I don't shake people's hand and say, hi, I'm Catholic. So unless it comes up in conversation, nobody knows. What do you think about whether we should be just talking to Catholics or whether we're open to our you know, people who aren't Catholics joining in the conversation? What's your take on that?
Well, as far as who the message is for, I think it's for everybody. Right. You know, I think if we've tied evangelization too tightly to the everybody else besides us, right. I think we're a little off on what evangelization means, you know? But as far as who can be part of the conversation, I think that should be open to everyone. You know, you're going to have a more well-rounded perspective when you know others are involved in the conversation. But also, the message of evangelization is for everyone, and so the Lord did not say, you know, go out to all the world and don't tell anybody anything. You know,
yeah, keep it quiet.
First rule.
Often people think evangelization is having a job or having a hobby, which is street preaching or perhaps getting online, especially that's the most recent one, getting on social media and arguing with people about the faith.
And yelling at
people. But actually, the conversational aspect and the real life interaction with people is probably the point of evangelization, the actual friend actually making friendships and having conversations within those friendships so that you actually share in a real way. And in a sense, and maybe I can throw this at you, what we're hoping in podcasting is to model what we hope happens more deliberately in Catholic lives. Now, you've mentioned you have those conversations in your workplace and you thought this would be great if we could have it a bit more broadly. Similar thing for me. I used to have it with a bunch of friends in Melbourne and lost it when I came to Sydney because I didn't have the same bunch of friends. Maybe it's what we need to encourage in Catholics, ordinary Catholic lives, is that they deliberately set aside time, deliberately make time to have these regular discussions about life, the universe and everything. Yeah. Box, you're nodding frantically over there.
Yeah, I speaking with friends who are involved in lots of different Catholic groups, even amongst Catholics, those different groups have so many different opinions and views that if they just stay with themselves, it's a very contained vision of Catholicism. And so these conversations amongst Catholics, I think, is very necessary, even just the everyday things and the different approaches to be shared.
Yeah. There's a dangerous thing in Catholics that we have this thing called tradition, which is an excellent and wonderful thing. But we often confuse capital T tradition, which is the truth that's handed down for two millennia, with practices that have just happened to have atrophied around our regular parish life. And you find out, actually, nobody in the rest of the world does this. We just happen to have done it this way ourselves in this place for this long. And no, it is not heresy to move the, you know, the jar of flowers over there.
Depending on who you're targeting. Well,
maybe I can throw this one at Rich because this is a difference between Aussies and Americans.
Okay.
We do have a kind of a national identity, but mostly we're cynical about our national identity, as far as I can see in Australia. Whereas Americans seem to, there's some things around practice in American parishes that seem to have atrophied, which are actually about nationalism, sort of a national pride. Now, there's nothing necessarily sinful about being proud of your own country for good reasons. But when it's sort of, it seems to run alongside of Catholic doctrine, as if you contradict, you know, that burning the flag might be heretical or something like that. Now, whatever you think about the practice of the moral practice of that, it's not a heresy in that sense. Mm-hmm. And can you comment on that?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it's kind of becoming more in vogue lately in kind of American national conversation to criticize the United States. But generally, I think we're brought up to chant, you know, we're number one, we're number one, you know, and And not out of any sort of like bully, you know, bragging, like trying to push,
yep,
you know, ourselves around. It's more of, it is a real love, right, yeah, you know, of our nation and our country and our history. You know, the 4th of July, our Independence Day, mm-hmm, when it's Independence Day, everybody's wearing red, white, and blue and you know, there's fireworks and everybody's, you know, it's a national kind of event. And so,
which ironically are the colors of the country that you're independent from.
Exactly. We didn't really get into creative when it was. And so I do think that we tend to be very patriotic.
Yep.
Let me use that word. And times in which there's a tragedy or maybe a great triumph, in the recent Women's World Cup,
right,
the United, yep, States won. And so that was kind of a unifying thing, like the whole country was proud, right, of the women's national team. And so, yeah, but politics, yeah, you know, always comes in and I get so tired of politics.
Well, can I throw in this one? When I was in Alabama.
Edit that part out. The whole part about politics.
Oh, that's all right. You're allowed to express your frustrations. When I was in Alabama some time ago, they took me to this mall, and because they said, do you want to come and see this tourist attraction or this one? No, just take me to a mall. I want to see the similarities and differences between our cultures.
Okay.
And I went to a mall. It was one of those huge malls with a, you know, three levels, but then there was an overarching dome over the three levels. And hanging from the third floor down to the bottom floor was a flag. And I said, all right, why the flag? And they said, that's our flag. And I said, yeah, I recognize the American flag. Why have it here? And they said, that's our flag. I said, yeah, it's bigger than most of the building. Why? You're in America. You don't need someone to advertise it. Why the flag? And the answer was always, that's our flag. And I was intrigued by this obsession with the flag, and especially that people seem to take offense at mistreatment of the flag. There's certain outrage, if you like, when you see it. And there's a British comedian who took this up. I think it was David Mitchell. And he says, if someone burns a flag, they go, oh, you burned our flag. No, you didn't. You burnt your own flag. You had to pay for it. Good on you for burning your own stuff. Who cares? But there seems to be a symbol there which is incredibly important to Americans, which Australians would go, whatever. You know, I mean, we're not keen on people burning our flags, but if you burned an Australian flag, most people would go, okay, well, you paid for it. It's your problem.
Yeah.
But Marianne Glendon.
Well, our national anthem is about our flag.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Oh, say, can you see in the dawn's early light, is all about the morning after a battle in the War of 1812 when the flag was still flying. I mean,
wow.
Oh, say, does that star-spangled banner yet good wave? Grief. It's all about our flag.
Yeah. Well, see, you know, I guess Australians aren't used to taking that seriously either, because our second verse of our national anthem says, you know, for those who come across the seas with boundless plains to share, except we're locking them away in concentration camps. Having said that, coming back to the flag, Marianne Glendon made the point that it's interesting that the US citizens seem to be very strong about the flag as a central point. And she said, maybe it's because there's not much else that unites them. Because if you talk about what people in the northern states or the southern or the west or the east have in common, she was saying it's hard to point to something. And she, mind you, she's involved in law, so she's not terribly convinced that the Constitution is a rallying factor, having seen what lawyers do with it.
I think that might be fair. No one's saying, yay, Constitution.
So would you say that there's something that sort of unites the Americans around, that's not the flag, but to some sort of principle or some sort of idea that unites them?
We talk a lot about freedom.
Okay.
And we talk a lot about, or at least like our it's almost a radical individuality,
right.
That I am my own person and you can't tell me what to do. And I think that's, you know, we could get really deep and start talking about you know, modern philosophers like Hobbes and Locke and Rousseau, and kind of, I think that we were really kind of the project out of those philosophers,
right.
And whether or not that philosophy could actually form a people.
There's a certain optimism, isn't there? In the sense of, I've heard some political commentators say the entire political setup and philosophy of the United States, it came from an optimistic time of, like, this optimism about human nature, about human beings, that there's a huge potential.
Yeah, we could govern ourselves.
Whereas in Australia...
And we could start all over again. You know, even though history, we don't have a history really to speak of.
Australians here.
Well, that's true. But I was just talking to somebody from Scotland a couple of days ago, and you know, he's talking about battles and, like, you know, 700 years ago, that, like, how his town's name got, and I'm like, man, my state is a 200 years old.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, our country was federated in 1901, so, you know, I mean, we were around for, I think, roughly 100 years before that, but in terms of actual existing as a country, you know, it's only not much over 120. Is it, what is it, 119, 120 years now? So we're not old in that sense.
Yeah, so we, you know, when you look at things like that other countries have, like a history, you know, whether or not a political history, but, like, you know, my ancestors were here for years and years and years. You know, most people in America can't put their ancestry in one spot back more than a few, you know, generations. A symbol like the flag becomes kind of a common uniting point.
In Australia, coming back to why the optimism of America being formed, Australia seems to be formed in a pessimistic time with regards to the human persons, because our whole political system seems to be set up, maybe it's just me being a pessimist, but the entire political system seems to be set up with the assumption that everyone's corrupt and that the political system is designed to stop anyone doing anything.
You're a nation of criminals. Maybe everybody is corrupt.
Yes, well, we gave them the vote, but we need to stop them from doing anything with it. Oh, dear. Well, I mean,
you know, one thing you mentioned to me a little while back is you had talked about Australian humor, and that it tends to be a little bit more sarcastic and whatnot. You know, I can relate with that. I think that a lot of American humor is sarcastic as well. I don't know the reason behind that. My experience with Australians is that you may have picked up a little bit more of the British dry humor than Americans have.
Like the deadpan sort of delivery, and that, yeah.
Exactly.
And it's also, like, a little bit more subtle.
The joke is told and it takes you a second to realize the joke was told.
Yep. Well, I've been to the cinema in the States and also in Australia with Americans, and it's often that their humor kicks in a little later on with British humor. Like, we'll have a chuckle at something and move on, and they still go, ah. Mind you, they're not used to our pace, because I took a young American girl, a group of us went, and there was a young American girl who went with us to the cricket match at the Boxing Day's test match here in Australia. I don't know if you know anything about cricket, but she came along.
I just know that it lasts like 3 days
you're
long.
Wrong. It goes for 5 days. Now, she came along to this match, and she was all keen, and she face painted and did all the usual kind of crowd things. And we're kind of looking at her going, you're going to keep that up? Okay. And then the players went off for morning tea, which is after the first session of like 3 hours. And she's gone, oh, it's over. Who won? We go, no, this is just the first session. And she's gone, oh, wait, it goes longer. It was at halftime. We said, no, this is the first of 4 sessions today. And at the end of the day, they then go out and have, you know, sleep, and then they come back and play again tomorrow. Oh, it goes for 2 days? No, 5 days. And then she was asking about the scores. How do you win? Well, you have to get the other team out twice and have more score than them. Well, what happens if you don't? Well, then it's a draw. And she said, you go for 5 days and you still don't have a winner? And at that stage, that was about...
You got to change some of those rules, man.
And they have...
Just the very fact that you break a game to go have tea to an American.
Very
that's
British.
Like, what?
It is very British. And they've made forms of the game. So there's the one-day match, which when it first came out was this whole... you know, no, this isn't real cricket because it's only one day and they have 50 overs a side. So the 50 overs is six ball overs. So that's, you know, 300 balls in oh, it's just not cricket. It's not the same thing. That apparently wasn't good enough for our TV audiences who are used to American TV. So now they have what's called a 20-20, which is only 20 overs each way. But even that's like still longer than a baseball game, I think. Just
baseball game, 2.5-3 hours. Right. But you know, the thing with baseball is that is the one game that we do appreciate. Well, it depends on who you talk to, but we call it our national pastime, right? And so people do enjoy kind of the relaxed nature of baseball. And so they've tried at different times to institute a clock on the pitcher to keep the game moving. And every time it gets shot down because people don't, they enjoy kind of a slower pace with baseball. Now, if you're going to talk about something like hockey or basketball or American football, we want to keep that moving. Now,
when you say hockey, do you mean ice hockey?
Yes. Okay.
Because we don't have much ice down here. So when we say hockey, we mean like on grass.
Oh, like field hockey.
Yeah.
That's what we would call it, field hockey.
Okay. Ice is not so common down here that we just say, oh, that's hockey. Sorry. There's nowhere to train.
Well, in Phoenix, Arizona, they have a hockey team. So they just set up the arena. We're just beginning our autumn. And so the ice is an impending reality that we're all having to prepare for.
All right. Coming back to the podcast and what it can do, we've talked a little bit about how Australians and Americans are different, but what's interesting is how much crossover there is when we've talked, like we've had some of our audience comes from the States and some of your audience comes from all sorts of other places overseas. I'm interested in podcasts and things like this as a means of us actually becoming more universal in our Catholic faith. What do you think about that?
Sure. You know, as far as the what's the same between Australians and Americans, when I was a kid, you know, watching television, Australia was kangaroos and boomerangs, you know. And as I grew up and actually met Australians and interacted with them, for me it just kind of seemed like you all were almost like a sibling nation. Like we were very, very alike in many ways. You're a nation with a Western culture. I think we have similar pastimes and similar philosophical ways of thinking. Plato called them the unexamined opinions. And so I think that we kind of function in the same way in a lot of ways. And so we can have conversations about our culture, even though the particulars might be different, you know, Catholic school funding or whatnot. But we're coming from, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the same kind of philosophical background and way of thinking that allows us to approach a question with the same mindset.
It certainly does. There are some barriers to free conversation. So Aussies tend to be a little less reverent about things. And in fact, the way you can tell if an Australian likes you is that they'll start poking fun quite early in the conversation. When Aussies are very formal with you, you need to be worried at that point. It actually means you're in trouble. So
yeah, I mean, I hear that, but I think about my own interactions. I mean, I don't know. If somebody comes right off the bat and they're poking fun and stuff, I mean, it endears you to them. I think what might be the difference there is maybe if it's delivered with that deadpan.
Yeah.
Like the American might not pick up on the deadpan.
Yeah.
Like,
Aussies do that a lot.
Trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we don't hardly do that at all. And so that might be the confusion, you know, like, oh shoot, I'm causing trouble. Yeah,
if when I ask people what's the difference between Aussie and American humor, they tend to say that Americans are a lot more obvious with their humor. Like it's very much like they drop a joke and they're all standing around waiting for you to laugh, whereas the Aussies will just plow on as if nothing's happened. And you sometimes it'll take a few, and they're almost delighted when it takes people a little bit longer to for the penny to drop. See what I did there? Yeah. In terms of actually promoting, it's funny, I don't actually see this podcast thing as being necessarily a tool to promote the Catholic Church. I'm not actually interested in that per se.
Mm-hmm.
We want to talk about truth, goodness, and beauty, like actual ordinary stuff which is good for every human person. And the Catholic perspective adds a particularly, I think, an excellent lens to look at the world, and it encourages people to come and join us in this particular worldview, or at least engage with it rationally. But we're just really trying to be genuine thinkers and genuine moral agents in the world. You're nodding over there, boss. Right.
No, I mean, it's one of those things. So many people are terrified to speak about their faith and how it's integrated into every area of their life.
Mm.
And so to have it openly like this, hopefully it encourages other people to, in their own daily lives, converse with other people. Just, you know, you don't even have to say you're Catholic.
Mm.
Just start talking as a Catholic and live, I guess, that life that doesn't have to separate your faith from, I don't know, watching sports or, you know, reading comic books.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's often a surprise. Yeah. People are surprised when they hear ordinary Catholics being ordinary.
Mm.
Especially when they go, aren't you one of these like hyper-Catholics, or, you know, we take it really seriously. Once I had one conversation I remember vividly. I'd just been playing a player versus player online game where it's ruthless. Like, you actually fight the other person. It's quite engaged and hardcore. And I had done very well in this particular session, and the other person asked to talk afterwards because they wanted to talk about tactics and everything. And it, for various reasons, that it came up that I was Catholic, and he said, wait, you're Catholic? Really? Seriously? And I said, well, what makes you doubt that? He says, you just killed me like 10 times. Isn't that against your morals? It's a computer game, dude. I'm having fun. Yeah, but you killed me. Seriously, you killed. He couldn't get over this. You killed me. I thought I was sinning every time I played this game.
Well, let's lay down some ground rules here. I didn't actually kill you.
He still reminds me of that occasionally when we have a chat. That's pretty fun. All right. So this, I see this perhaps as kind of a contribution to culture, not being countercultural. But I guess in some ways it could be countercultural. What do you think, guys?
There's an element that's very countercultural with the approach, but I think that's also contributing to enrich the culture, to add that little bit of spice.
Right.
I think the culture can't just be everyone agreeing with each other, but revealing that there's other ways of thinking, other ways that we can move forward.
But as Rich said earlier, that disagreement actually enhances a friendship, doesn't actually detract from it.
That's right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If it's done in the context of trust
and respect,
and that you're not just trying to tear this person down, that you're not trying to beat them in the argument, that you're actually trying to both have the truth as your goal, and so you're both exploring it. But this question about culture, I find a fascinating one, for many reasons. Part of it is just the question of what is a culture,
right?
And so, what does it mean to be countercultural? You know, John Paul II called modern Western culture a culture of death. And so,
was he talking about the whole culture or just elements of that culture?
That's a good question. I would say probably just elements of it. One could ask, can you have a culture of death? Because the word there is comes from the Latin cultus, you know, to cultivate, to worship, you know, ultimately the cult, you know, of worship.
And also, so, ironically, to make a garden.
Exactly. Yeah. So if we're meeting, let's say that culture of death, that culture that has maybe lost its way with God, maybe we're proposing culture to them.
Yeah. Even if someone's engaged in a culture which leads to a kind of like a death, you know, it's basically ends in death or promotes death. We talked about this a bit with regards to the mortgages when we had the episode on mortgages. Even if the whole culture is corrupt in some way, most people engaged in it are engaged in it because it's what they're immersed, you know, they're immersed in. So what they're actually living out in their daily life, they haven't chosen that end. Like, that's not the point.
Sure.
And so in some respects, we're not necessarily bringing in something and saying you should think differently. We're more or less pointing out, hey, if you go with the flow on this one, this is where it leads. Wouldn't it be cool if we had a slightly different aim here? And it, you know, we're not saying you're a bad person, but the train tracks that we're on go to a cliff, you know. So we mm-hmm. need to perhaps move this very good train to a different set of tracks.
Yeah, the we can actually we've got something here that at the core of your heart you actually desire.
Mm.
You're just maybe not aware of it, and you're not being fed it. That part of your soul, your mind, your heart isn't being cultivated. Mm. And so,
and the whole culture around you is pushing you in a particular direction. And again, not even consciously sometimes, it's just the way the machine's going. And in, mm-hmm. in some respects, it's not as easy to go against the flow sometimes.
Yeah. Exactly. And so that's why I kind of am interested in this question of culture, because there's a philosopher named Joseph Pieper, and he wrote a book, Leisure, the Basis of Culture. And one of the things that he said there is, really at the heart of culture is worship.
Right.
And so what we have to offer as Catholics to the surrounding culture is this idea of we know who to worship. Right. And so we can really bring that. And as Paul the Sixth said, modern man is more convinced by witnesses rather than teachers. Yeah. And so we can, through things like podcasts or just striking up a conversation on the train or whatever, we can propose the one whom we worship with our lives. Right. And so the building up of the culture, again, isn't going to necessarily happen by standing up and preaching on that corner you mentioned there, Ryan, with the Bible on the campus. It's going to be by the witness of your life, by the conversations that you have. It's going to be, wait, what? You're Catholic? Yeah. I would never expect a Catholic to kill me.
yeah, we need that one in context, that particular one. All right.
It's called the Middle Ages, bro.
Yeah, that wasn't our finest hour, I have to say. All right, so we probably should begin to wrap this one up. It's time now for a segment we call 1 Minute Wonder, which for Richard, it's a part of the show where we pick something that we've seen, heard, or experienced this week which has made us stop and wonder, something that's made us smile or appreciate life a little more. So in 1 minute, Box.
I've been spending a lot of time with my cousins lately who are spending a lot of time at home, and just seeing them, they're in primary school and high school, so elementary school and high school, and seeing them change from a very dependent person to try this independence and seeing how they share less and less of their lives, I guess, verbally with the rest of us, the adults in the house. It sort of got me reflecting on our own relationship with God in our youth, how open and how honest we are, and yet we can start to get more closed off in our own relationships, and sort of challenged me to try to, I guess, improve my prayer life.
Yeah. Good stuff. Rich.
You know, in our family, we have 3 children, and one of the things that we try to do is we try to cultivate an attitude of, well, I was going to say attitude of gratitude, but that's too cliche. We try to cultivate gratitude in our children. And last week, we had a storm here, and I was backing out of our driveway, and just as I was pulling out of the driveway, the tree in our front yard came down onto the driveway and just barely missed me. If I would have been a half a second later, it would have crushed the car. So,
wow.
I pulled off onto the other side of the road, and my first instinct was to give thanks, to the Lord that he saved my life. And so, it struck me that, I think oftentimes when we try to form our children, we're also forming ourselves. Mm. And I was then grateful that my first reaction was gratitude.
It's a teachable moment for the kids too, that one. Because they often remember, like my kids never remember the hours and hours of lectures I've given them, but they remember when something big happened, how I reacted to that. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. My wonder this week is that someone challenged me to listen to Beyoncé's album Lemonade. Now, it's not my normal listening habit. In fact, they challenged me to watch the 1 hour music video she released with the album itself.
1 hour.
It's a 1 hour music video, which is all of her songs put into a story.
Ah.
And I'm always fascinated by music albums that tell stories. Mm. And so they said, you've got to listen to this. And then they made me, you know, respond and come back to them, etc. Just for the listeners, it's an adult, very adult themed thing. So there's language and there's references to marriage because it's about her marriage, apparently, because she doesn't explain it at all. Mm. But the story itself is such an intense exploration of faithfulness and infidelity and healing through marital discord and all kinds of intense things and family of origin. It's almost a case study for marriage counseling. It's just absolutely fascinating and quite deep in its exploration of trust and fidelity in marriage. I think it's one of the most amazing things that's been done. I've been whinging for some time that music videos are basically just pretty people dancing around, which has no relationship with what they're singing. This basically has answered that kind of call for it to have a meaningful thing. I'm amazed by it. Again, for the listener, it's very adult and not for everyone. It's quite intense emotionally, but I have a new respect for this particular singer. I'm going to have to go and listen to some other stuff, although I feel like I might be disappointed by the rest of her stuff. Anyway.
Just look for the song, All the Single Ladies.
No, now you've ruined it. So, no, Lemonade is the one that I listen to. I haven't actually spent much of time paying her attention. That's it for this week's podcast. If today's discussion got you thinking or arguing with your podcast device, let us know. You can subscribe to the podcast on our website, thiscatholiclife.com.au, or on iTunes, Spotify, or any of the other podcast apps. You can tell us what you liked, what you didn't like, what you'd like us to discuss in future shows by dropping us a line at info@thiscatholiclife.com.au. Thank you to all the people who have been emailing. I've been trying to get back to you as soon as I can, and I'm intrigued by your suggestions of future shows. We're working on them and we're working on getting those out as we find the right people to talk about them. You can continue the conversation on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, or Discord, and you can find the links and our show notes or on our website. Write us a review on iTunes, as I said at the top of the show. Remember that this is a uniquely Australian Catholic podcast. We think that's an idea worth getting behind, so tell your friends about it. Before we go, it's time for shout-outs. So what have you got for us today?
My cousins. After that mention of One Minute Wonder, yeah, my cousins are all the best with your exams.
Rich.
I would like to shout out all the people that have listened to our podcast from the beginning and have kind of really given us support and encouragement and again, ideas for topics of different episodes. So thank you to all that listened to The Armchair Catholic. Cool.
Do check it out, guys. I wasn't just being nice to Rich. I actually did listen to the podcast and he inspired me in some ways to go ahead with our own podcast. So thank you very much for the work you do over there and keep it up. My shout out is to my daughter who turned 17. She's just the same amazing, vivacious, talented and just stunning personality as she was when she was two and running around and making us all wonder what she would be. And now she is that person and it's amazing to see where she's going. And I can't wait to see what the next chapter for her life is. That's all for now. Thank you for listening to This Catholic Life.